Welcome to hour number two of Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. The producers for the program, Harriet Williams and Martha Deal, Henry Frayne, is at the controls. In this part of Focus 580, we'll be talking about electric utility deregulation, very specifically here in the case of the state of Illinois, but perhaps also we'll talk about what has happened elsewhere in the United States on this score. And the reason for talking about it now is this. Back in 1997, here in the state of Illinois, the legislature passed a law deregulating the electric utility industry. Supporters of this deregulation argued that the result would be increased competition for potential power suppliers for residential consumers, not just residential consumers, all consumers. But the basic idea was that at your house there, you'd be able to choose among power suppliers the way that you today can choose, for example, your phone company. And the end result would be for consumers would be lower rates. Also at the time, there was a cut in rates and there was a rate freeze for residential customers, and that was going to go for 10 years. So now 10 years has passed, almost passed. The hoped-for competition for residential users has not developed, and now consumers are looking at the possibility, if nothing changes, the possibility of a big jump in their power bills next year. Our guest in this part of Focus 580 is George Gross. He's professor of electrical and computer engineering with an appointment as professor in the Institute of Government and Public Affairs. And among his research activities is research into electric utility regulatory policy. He's been here on the program before. Going back some time when this was new in the run-up to deregulation, we talked about it some on the show. He's also a little bit more recently been here to talk about issues of distribution of power and some of the problems that we have seen with big meltdowns. And we're pleased that he could be back here with us again to talk about this subject of deregulation in Illinois. Questions are welcome. All we ask of callers is that people just try to be brief so we can get in as many as possible. But, of course, anybody's welcome to call 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Thanks very much for being here.
Well, thanks very much.
Just let me ask you there's a lot of things I'm sure here we could talk about, but let me ask you the big question up front. As I said back when we were talking about this before the law was passed, the idea, the hope was that there would be competition in the market for residential folks, people in their home, as I say, could have some choice. They could choose among power companies the way that now we choose among phone companies. And the idea was that that competition would produce lower rates. Now, lo, these many 10 years later, no, there is no competition. And one wonders what the potential is for competition even within the next 5 or 10 years. Why do we not have that competition, that hoped for, that promised competition? Why did it never materialize?
Well, this is a very difficult question, and it's difficult particularly here in Illinois because we have frozen prices, and for residential, certainly we don't have competition. There's no competition because the prices are artificially low, have been low for the 8 years in which the law was in effect, and then they lengthened the effect for 2 more years. This was a bill in 1994 to do that. So that's why we have this 10-year, which is now coming to an end in December. Nobody can compete, basically, at these low prices. So at the residential level, we don't have competition. We do have very healthy competition at the commercial level, and about 40%, say, of the customers in ComEd territory, who are industrial, large industrial customers, they have opted to receive service from somebody else than ComEd because in that area we do have competition.
Mm-hmm. There, just let me touch on that for a moment because it's, as you say, the idea was the deregulation was there for everybody, for big users or for small users, and it phased in over a period of time. They started with the very biggest users, so if you had a huge factory, you'd get to go first, and then if you were maybe a smaller commercial user, maybe you had a small business, then you would go. And then the final people that were supposed to go were the residential customers. So it actually has, you would say that actually for the big users, industrial and commercial users, has this actually worked? Has there been a benefit?
It has worked because there are those people are have relatively large loads, and there is interest in serving them. Now, we're facing a very big problem because when we pass such a law, you have to have the consensus of all the groups. The law gets passed. The governor signs it. The unions want to be happy, so they're assured that they won't lose any jobs. The residential customers want to be happy, so that we freeze the rates. But that's basically, we allow competition in the wholesale markets, and then we hold back the hands of the people who service the retail markets, and they have to charge a fixed price. And my analogy is that it's very, very difficult to stay in business when you're baking bread and you're a baker and you're forced by the government to sell every loaf that you bake for $1 a loaf, and yet the price of flour keeps going up.
Yeah. Well, then for those people who... So if you ask this question, why is there no competition? The answer is because the companies decided they couldn't make money. Essentially, another company is not going to come into the market because they decide they can't make money selling to residential customers.
They cannot compete.
They can't compete. So then if someone says, well, really, the whole thing was flawed because we to keep consumers happy, we put this rate freeze into effect. First of all, we cut the rates and then we froze them. So for someone who would say that's really the problem, that's why there's no competition, it was this freeze, would you say, yes, that is the reason?
To some extent, that is correct. But were they not to grant this rate freeze, you would not have had the support of all the legislators. So it's kind of difficult. We sometimes joke in the industry that there's a way we decided to do restructuring, and I call it restructuring as opposed to deregulation, because we haven't deregulated everything. We have more regulations today than we've ever had in this industry, is that we studied what the British did, and we copied the British model. It's like going to Britain and say that, well, we like what you do in your country. It's very quaint. We love the way you drive in your country. We're going to adopt it very slowly over here, but we're going to do it first only for the buses. So we're going to move our driving to the other side of the road, but not the other vehicles. And then we have a lot of clashes, and that's what's happening right now. Mm-hmm. We restructure part of the industry, but not the rest. And consequently, it gets to a point where we sweep everything under the rug, and sooner or later, that amount of dirt starts piling up.
I remember, and I know, having gone back now and looked at some of the articles that were written about this, going back maybe, you know, 5 years or something like that, after a few years after the law had passed, when still no competition for residential users had appeared, and people would say things like, well, you know, we're just going to have to give this time. It's going to take a while. So now it's been 10 years, there still isn't any, and the legislature is talking about continuing the freeze at least, say, I think what they're talking about is another 3 years, so it would take us to 2010, I guess. So given that, if we just say, well, it'll take time for competition to develop, if nothing else changes, in another 3 years, will there be any competition?
Absolutely not. In fact, everybody who's in this business, who's been eyeing the Illinois market, is pulling out because of the uncertainty and because of all this talk about rate freeze. So if we do go in and again change the law, we're basically going to ensure that we won't have competition.
Well, going back, you were talking about the fact that going back to the time that this law was passed, that your feeling was that the rate freeze was really necessary to get legislators to agree because they wanted to keep their constituents happy. And the concern must have been at that time that if we deregulate rates, that somehow rates will suddenly go up, that people will have to be paying more. You know, maybe it's not possible to answer a question like this, but do you think actually that would have happened? I mean, supposing that we passed the deregulation and there was no rate freeze, what would have, does anybody really know what would have happened?
Well, we can all speculate, but you know, every time we make a law, there are loopholes and people take advantage of it. So I imagine that if we wouldn't have had that many constraints, if people could make a business of this in the large industrial, there could have been some kind of business to try to do it also in the residential. But when you're facing essentially prices today which are lower than they were 10 years ago, and we have in that decade, for example, we've had huge increases in terms of price of gasoline, price of public transportation. The consumer price index has gone up something like 29%. This is the only commodity that we're still buying at lesser cost than we did 10 years ago.
Let me introduce again the guest for this part of Focus 580, George Gross. He's professor of electrical and computer engineering, also has an appointment as professor in the Institute of Government and Public Affairs, and among other things is interested in electric utility regulatory policy. We're talking about electricity deregulation here in the state of Illinois. Questions are welcome. 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line that's good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. There is, as I said, there is now in the General Assembly some discussion about continuing the rate freeze, and the number that I have seen in the stories is 3 years, another 3 years. It doesn't look like anything's going to happen before the election. This may be, they may have to call a special session, or maybe they can deal with it in a veto session in November. It seems that there's a fair amount of support for this in the General Assembly. The two power companies, Commonwealth Edison and Ameren, have said to the General Assembly, to the state government, said if you keep this rate freeze in effect for a number of years, another 3 more years, we're going to go bankrupt. Do you think that that is actually true? What would be the impact on the power companies of another 3 years of rate freeze?
Okay, well, we have to separate, first of all, who would go bankrupt. I don't think Exelon or I don't think Ameren would go bankrupt. Possibly, if you're talking about bankruptcy, we're talking about their operating companies. So it can be Ameren IP or Ameren SIPS or Ameren Silco or perhaps ComEd. Mm-hmm. We have a very nice example in California where we had similar restructuring, much more sweepings than here in Illinois, doing it much, much faster. And it had really disastrous results because they were very worried about the impact of restructuring. They were worried about the utility companies getting too much power. Anyway, we know that one of the results was that in 2001, one of the largest utility companies did go bankrupt, Pacific Gas and Electric. They have since gone back, and they're doing fine. But there's no need to drive any of the companies here into bankruptcy because the impacts in terms of the economics of the state are very, very bad. California is still reeling from those impacts. Many companies have moved out. And they've told the governor that we're not going to establish any more plants or new operations in the state until you fix the reliability problems. So I think I don't know if that's too much of an exaggeration, but it is conceivable that tying the hands of the utilities where they would have to subsidize the rates, that would be too expensive for them to bear.
Mm. And to the extent that you have a feeling for the General Assembly and what they're likely to do. Do you think that it is likely that the General Assembly would indeed vote to extend the freeze for another 3 years?
Well, certainly if the vote were today, I would say because they're running for office, they would have to do that. We'll see what happens in the veto session because it will depend on the elections. But very difficult to win an election on the basis that, yes, I'm not going to freeze the rates because you guys should have higher rates. Yeah. It doesn't sell very well to junk you public.
Yeah. Well, let's talk with a caller. We have someone here calling from Cerro Gordo on our toll-free line, line 4. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I have a question about something my wife heard on the Decatur television news this morning and thinks she understood that Ameren either will or is considering changing their rate structure so that electrically heated homes no longer would enjoy the 2.5 cent per kilowatt hour rate in the winter. And it may be as high as 10.5 cents. And for us, that would be a hardship because we just invested a substantial amount of money into a geothermal system, which was based on that rate structure. And I just wondered if you knew anything about that.
All I know also is what's in the papers that they're thinking about stopping that rate because at this point they're subsidizing it. But any rate change is subject to Illinois Commerce Commission approval, and so far we haven't heard from the commission. So, yes, I'm sure that on their part they would like to stop it, but they would have to get the approval of the Illinois Commerce Commission.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Well, other questions are welcome. 333-9455. That's for Champaign-Urbana. Toll-free, 800-222-9455. It is my understanding that currently Ameren IP customers are paying less than the national average for electricity.
That is correct.
True?
That is correct.
The national average is 9.5 cents per kilowatt hour. Ameren IP customers pay 7.6 cents.
This is a residential customers.
Yes. I'm thinking of, guys like us.
Yeah.
Residential customers. There is some question, I guess, about if, let us say, the rate freeze expires. Legislature doesn't do anything. Rate freeze expires. Some question about, well, just how much would rates go up then? Is it possible to say what Ameren IP, for example, a residential Ameren IP customers would be paying starting in 2007 if their rate freeze is gone?
Well, we can all speculate and we know what the company would like to get. But I have to come back and say that one of the unfortunate events here happening is that every time we talk about a rate freeze, it emasculates the Illinois Commerce Commission, which is put in there to actually protect the ratepayers and to supervise the companies to see what they're doing in terms of rates. The Illinois Commerce Commission has not yet stated any position on the rate request that we have received following the auction. Consequently, we don't know. I don't see it as a very strong possibility that they will roll in a 55% increase in rates in 1 year because that's politically unpalatable. We've also seen the aftermath what happened in the state of Maryland, where basically they had to call the legislature to try to put an end to a 72% rate increase because that's what the Public Utility Commission wanted to do in Maryland.
Yeah. I have several callers now here, and I want to get to them. And I want to come back to the and have you explain for people who are not really sure about the reverse auction and about what exactly that is and how it goes. But you did touch on what, as a result of the reverse auction, is projected to be the high end of what the increase could be for Ameren customers, Ameren IP customers, and they are, I think 55% is the extreme. It was like somewhere between 40% and 55%.
Correct, because we have some of the Ameren subsidiaries have only cut rates by 5% as a result of the 1997 law. Illinois Power has cut it by 20%.
Yeah, so that would mean that I guess for the average customer, you might be looking at an increase of about, maybe about $30 a month, something like that.
Well, it depends, but easily that much.
Yeah.
And as I keep saying, I think it's going to be phased in because it's going to be very difficult to politically try to push a move, which is a big chunk increase at one time.
Yeah. Well, and in fact, that is what the company has said that they want to do. It's their selling point is, yes, that there will be an increase, but what we want to do is try to phase this in over time so that there's not any this very large jump right at the beginning.
Yes, and that depends again on the Illinois Commerce Commission in terms of how they're going to rule that phasing is going to be done, whether it's going to be the utility company acting as a banker and lending money to the ratepayers, or is it going to be in terms of phased in by rates which are going to be approved by the Commerce Commission.
Yeah, and it's that I think what the power company would like to do is they'd like to have that first option.
That's exactly the plans that Ameren has proposed.
That's what they proposed. Okay. Let's talk with some other callers. In fact, the lines are full here, so we'll get right back to it, starting with someone in Champaign in line one. Hello.
Get it out.
Yes.
I have a question. What year did the Illinois legislature vote to deregulate electricity in the year 2007?
1997 was a law passed, which was signed by Governor Edgar.
That was before Enron was already utilizing deregulation in California to their benefit, much to the chagrin of California electricity consumers.
That's correct.
At that time, when everyone was reeling from the exorbitant rates per kilowatt hour that Enron was charging from their GenCos. And I'd like you to explain to people, when deregulation was voted in California as well as Illinois, it gave Commonwealth Edison and Illinois Power the ability to go ahead and sell off some of their facilities. And so electric utility companies were broken into TransCos, transmission line companies, GenCos, generation companies, and DISCOs, distribution, like here in Champaign. All our phone line or our electric lines are DISCOs here in town. Would you explain to them why all of the cities in California, and for that example, the city of Springfield, who has municipal electric generation, meaning the city of Springfield generates their own electricity, like the U of I has increased their capacity with the expansion of the Abbott Power Plant to generate their own electricity, that their actual kilowatt hour rates are significantly less per kilowatt hour because of municipal generation or even just the ownership of the distribution lines in the cities. In California, those municipal electric companies were able to buy wholesale rates, and while the rest of California was reeling, these cities that had their own municipal electric facilities actually still had lower interest rates because they were able to negotiate cheaper kilowatt-hour rates. Could you explain the difference between GenCos, DISCOs, TransCos to the listeners? And explain why, even in the face of deregulation, municipally owned electric companies enjoy the lowest kilowatt hour rates. And I'd like to hear this off the air.
All right. Well, thanks for the call.
Thank you for the question. It's really quite complicated, but let's put certain things in perspective. In California, the cities did not become part of the restructuring. So the municipal systems did not give choice to customers in terms of buying from other entities, only the investor-owned utilities. So that's number one. So therefore, the rates continued to be exactly as before. The rates of the residential customers in California, they kept being what the legislature passed in terms of being at 11 cents per kilowatt hour. And it was true in 2000 and part of 2001 when they had to change those rates because at 11 cents per kilowatt hour, basically 7 cents would go for the commodity electricity price. However, 7 cents would correspond to $70 per megawatt hour. At that time, the average price in the California wholesale market was around $300 per megawatt hours. So $230 had to be subsidized by the company. So it was this idea that, yes, we allow competition in probably what is the most volatile commodity in the world, which is electricity, on the wholesale markets, but on the retail markets, you have to charge a fixed price. So it's very difficult to run such a business efficiently. In terms of your question, in terms of GenCo, TransCo, and DISCO, essentially, Ameren Illinois Power today is, by your definition, simply a DISCO because Ameren, as a holding company owns the transmission lines. There is another subsidiary which holds the generation resources, and Ameren IP has sold off some of its or most of its generation resources to Dynegy, so that's owned out of Houston. And that was a move that the Illinois Commerce Commission allowed because they thought that for the quid pro quo of fixed contracts at reasonable rates, they will engender competition in wholesale markets. In retrospect, there's a lot of thought about that. And essentially, it was that that idea that engendered, finally, the auction that we had to have this year.
Mm-hmm. So, and then as far as the question about municipal utilities go, like, the, for example, the city of Springfield, every time we hear Springfield, Illinois, do they, generally speaking, do municipally owned utilities, is that a better, does that end up being a better deal for residential residential users?
Sometimes yes, sometimes not. The city of Springfield actually got into trouble in 1998 when we had a price spike, and they started playing in this wholesale markets, and they nearly went bankrupt. So they have now a long-term contract with one of the marketers and so forth. So I'm not necessarily sure that their rates are lower today than the rates we're paying here in Champaign-Urbana. Mm-hmm. And, for example, City of Los Angeles provides its own power, and it's very, very competitive with what they charge in San Francisco, San Jose, perhaps a cent less. They don't pay any taxes.
Yeah. And just for a second, just to go back to, again, the caller was talking about the fact that the these systems, where it used to be the case that there was one company that essentially owned everything from the generator, however they generated the power, everything from there to where it went into your house. There was one company that had all of that. There was all one company. And then with deregulation, what could happen is that the various pieces could be broken up, and so that company could then have sold its, for example, if it had a nuclear power plant, if it wanted to sell it to somebody else, it could. If it wanted to sell the power lines to somebody else, it could. So theoretically, then the three pieces can get broken up. So it could be three different companies. Somebody generates the power. Somebody does the bulk of the transmission from the most of the way from the power plant to near to the end user. And then there's this last little bit of wire from there to the end user. Could be three different companies. Did then the companies benefit from, you know, how did they benefit financially from the fact that they could then do that? And if they wanted to, say, get out of the production business, they could. They could sell off their power plants, sell them to somebody else, and then buy the electricity from somebody to then sell it on to the end user.
All of those things were done to some extent in various parts of the country. And in terms of who benefited, it's not always clear. Mm-hmm. We certainly know that some of the investment bankers benefited very nicely in terms of buying some of these resources. But in the case of, just to make it clear, Exelon still owns the same resources it owned before restructuring. It's just owned by different subsidiaries. So
it's okay. So it broke up, but it didn't really break up.
It broke up, but it didn't really break
okay.
up.
What, just I'll get to the questions in a second here. Just one further thing. In a number of states, they did what we did here in Illinois. They deregulated their utilities. And the promise there, again, was this is going to mean greater choice for residential consumers, and we hope that that will mean lower rates. For some period of time, we'll put a cap on rates. And it's my understanding that there are a number of places where they're facing this sort of the same situation here in the state of Illinois. The caps and the freezes are starting to come off. The residential competition didn't come about here, didn't come out other places. And there are a lot of states that are looking at exactly the same sort of situation. So is it the case that when you're talking about residential consumers of electricity, that deregulation was a failure?
Well, I think it's a little bit early to write that obituary, but let's put it this way, that I don't use the word deregulation for various reasons, but we really didn't deregulate. It's very difficult to do it halfway, and we did it halfway. And so consequently, it's such an important infrastructural good, electricity, that there's always going to be some regulation, greater or lesser extent. So we deregulated certain parts. We liberalized certain parts of the industry, but didn't others. And we wrote the laws in such a way that every time you write the laws, there's some loopholes, and people took advantage of those loopholes. So it, from the point of view of residential customers, I cannot point to too many success stories.
Yeah, the restructuring, if you want to use that, the restructuring that we did, if you look at anybody who did benefit, the generally speaking, the residential consumers, they didn't benefit.
Not so far. And the reason is that the structure of the industry is very complicated. It's more complicated than airlines. It's more complicated than trucking. It's more complicated than telephones. In telephones, we've seen major cuts in terms of prices to consumers, and much of it is driven by technology. In airlines, we've seen about 25%, but you don't have this wholesale retail type of environment where you allow competition on the wholesale side, but it's very restricted on the retail side. So in certain ways, the legislation is written in such a way that it's very difficult to have a success story within 10 years. I think I would not put the death knell at this point, because if we start behaving a little bit more like a competitive market, and if the legislation that's going to come out allows us to do that, then I think we have a chance of bringing in innovation and bringing in competition. Competition is very good. I think it's going to drive prices lower. But you can't do it when you put on so many constraints.
Yeah. Our guest in this hour, George Gross. He is professor of electrical and computer engineering with an appointment as professor in the Institute of Government and Public Affairs here at the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. And among his interests is electric utility regulatory policy. That's what we're talking about here this morning. And we have some other callers. They've been patient with me, so we'll get to them, starting with Urbana and Line 2. Hello.
Hello.
Mm-hmm.
I've got two quick questions. One is, why do you continue to have faith that if we tinker with this long enough, it can work, since you have just said in the last few minutes that you can't point to a single success story, and you pointed out the structural problems that seem insurmountable in trying to get this to behave like the sort of market where we buy our gasoline and produce and so on. And then the second point, as you correctly pointed out, you know, Exelon still owns everything that it previously owned. It is just in three subsidiaries. So when we're getting these threats of bankruptcy, and I may be wrong, but as I understand it, the bankruptcy is going to occur in their distribution company. Meanwhile, their generation company is still generating fat profits. So the News Gazette recently has, or all summer, has been running editorials saying that these companies are losing money. Well, obviously, you can't lose money for 10 years and still be in business. But what in fact has been happening is they've been generating fat profits on the generating side and been breaking even or losing a little bit of money on the distribution side. And as a ratepayer for many, many years, it seems to me that those generating plants were built by the ratepayers. They were guaranteed a margin of profit when they built those. And so it seems to me to be a little bit unfair to ask us to pay for them again. It seems to me to be fair to say that we are going to freeze the rates. The overall Exelon will still make profits that they're accustomed to, but it's going to be redistributed between the elements of their company in such a way that those of us out here are not going to get stuck once again.
Okay. Well, you had quite a few questions over there, but basically, companies stay in business to make money. It doesn't matter which one it is. And companies are not going to stay long in business if they have to cross-subsidize their their other functions so that they can provide service to the customer. So it's not going to happen that for a long time Exelon Generation is going to start subsidizing ComEd so that ComEd can provide electricity at lower costs than it has to pay for it. So that's not going to survive. I'm trying to explain that the complications, the structural complications here arise because we have an industry which was built over 100 years and we're trying to restructure it. And when they write legislation comes out sometimes in a funny way. They were told that they would like to have unbundling of the generation from the transmission, from the distribution, so that they basically don't do it internally, and by unbundling it, we're going to have competition in each of the sectors. We have had competition in the generation sector, but we haven't been able to bring it in to the residential sector. And I keep having faith because once we allow to have a more level playing field where you don't hold the hand of the distributor that he has to keep frozen prices, we are going to see some competition because other people will come to realize that this is a good business. Let's compete for a share of that market.
Well, just I hear the caller saying, though, that if for the companies to say, if to say to the legislature, if you extend the rate freeze, we're going to go bankrupt, that it's disingenuous for them to say that, if not completely untrue, for them to say that if, in fact, what they really should say is that this would mean that one of our divisions will be hurting, and that may well be true, but if overall the company is making money, then that's really not for them to then what they're saying is actually not really is not the real case.
Well, you know, we can start slicing this many different ways, but we've also seen, for example, airlines which serve the Champagne market, and if they don't make money in the Champagne market, they pull out from that market. They're not going to serve it. It's not a cross subsidization of a subsidiary. This is part of the main business. A part of the main business for Exelon is to serve the customers. If they stop making money, or if they have to subsidize every one of their sales because of the prices being charged in the market, they're not going to be in that market because they have shareholders. Those shareholders invest in the company with the idea of them making money also, not in terms of cross-subsidizing certain parts of the company. So I don't think any company will stay in business very long that way.
Let's talk with someone in Belgium. Line 4. Hello.
Good morning. Mm-hmm. You brought up the case of Maryland, and a lifelong friend of mine was involved with that case. And he and I have talked about this very topic, and he's much more eloquent than I and knows, like you say, infinitely more about this very complex topic than I do. But he was pointing out that in the case of Maryland, and Illinois is very similar, we produce our electricity for very low prices, okay? The coal-fired plants are very cheap. Nuclear power plants are very cheap. And what the power companies are doing here is they're forcing the residents of Illinois, Maryland, whatever state you want to talk about, to pay a higher rate with this reverse auction. But what they'll do is they'll take our cheap power that they're producing, like this previous caller said, that we produce because we paid for these power plants back with the other legislation, they'll sell that power to a much higher place that'll pay more money. So you're just going to go back and forth, and we're always going to pay that top price, not the bottom price.
Okay. The situation in Maryland is so complicated.
Yes, it is.
This week, for example, the Maryland utility called off its plant to be sold to Florida Power, Florida Power Corporation, and that was going to be a $12.5 billion deal because they were very worried that the high rates that they would have to have after next year would basically not make any sense in terms of being sold at this stage. So I can't comment very much more about Maryland. In terms of the power being sold, you know, we make laws, we have consequences. The whole idea of unbundling is actually a federal initiative in terms of unbundling the electricity in the various parts and sectors that we have today. I'm not sure that what you're saying doesn't happen in terms of part of the energy going out and being sold to the highest bidder. It must happen because that company is in that business. And it's going to be very difficult, in fact, to have a state which is not going to restructure if in the wholesale market we have a certain price. Eventually, we all have to pay the wholesale price. So if we have a wholesale market that's competitive, it's going to affect the retail market. And it cannot happen that we can shield the retailers from paying for the true prices.
Thank you very much.
All right. Let's see. We'll go to Urbana. This is line number one. Hello.
Hello. Yes, I was wondering if you could help me out understanding why my bills, my electricity bills, have been so high. I had, since January last year, I have received humongous bills. Like in January, I received a bill for $249, and then the same January 27, I received another for $436. In March last year, 606, and then on March 28, 241, and then in September, I was in here. No, in I'm sorry, in May and June, I wasn't here, so I paid lower prices. But I just don't understand. It doesn't make sense to me that for a single house, I have to pay that much amount of electricity.
Excuse me, do you have electric heating in your house?
I have a furnace.
Okay, so those high prices that you're quoting for the winter months were for gas. They were not for electricity.
Yeah, so there is no connection then between the topic you are addressing and this one that I'm talking about?
You are asking now about gas prices. And gas prices basically get passed on in terms of the market. And we have that natural gas has gone up over 120% in the last 3 years.
Okay, but it's the same company that you are talking about. I've been billed by Ameren.
Right. It's Ameren services both gas and electricity.
But the issues are really it's a whole different sort of conversation. We're talking about the prices of natural gas.
Yeah, and I've been doing everything they say to protect the windows and put all sort of coverings around the windows and having my house very insulated and all of that. But I just don't understand what I had these bills. But it makes sense now that what you are saying that it's two different things, but still I don't know where to go in order to find out what went wrong.
Well, nothing went wrong. It's the price of natural gas has really been going up, and you're paying those charges because the utility has been given the power to essentially charge what they have to pay for.
Yeah, but it seems like still these outrageous prices. I mean, $606. It seems like I'm paying for the gas of the whole neighborhood. I just still doesn't make sense. Even though they have increased their for one single unit, all of that amount of money doesn't make sense.
Well, I'm sorry that probably here within this particular program that there's not very much we can do to help.
Yeah. Well, yes. Okay.
I'm sorry. I appreciate the call. Other people who want to call, 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Here this morning in this part of the show, we're talking about electricity rates and the deregulation of the electric utilities, what has happened here in Illinois, what's likely to happen. Our guest is George Gross. He's professor of electrical and computer engineering here at the U of I, has an appointment as professor in the Institute of Government and Public Affairs, and is interested in a number of things, including electric utility regulatory policy. And questions are welcome. 333-WILL, toll free, 800-222-WILL. We're coming down here. We have maybe about 4 or 5 minutes. We mentioned a couple of times the reverse auction, and this is something I'm not sure that I understand. I think probably a lot of other people aren't really quite sure they understand it either. This took place in the first week of September.
Correct.
And this gets at this question of, if the freeze comes off, well, then what are rates going to be? Can you explain what is the reverse auction?
Well, reverse auction is just another market mechanism, basically to set prices. All of us are used to increasing price auction. As, for example, when we go to an art or an antiques auction, prices keep going up till it's being sold to the highest bidder. Typically, at that kind of auction, we sell off a single item, a single lot that's being sold off. In electricity, we need thousands and thousands of megawatt hours that need to be sold off. So the idea was proposed and approved by the Illinois Commerce Commission to have this reverse auction. The idea is that we have a manager comes in and sets a relatively high price for the electricity which is needed to satisfy the load of the residential customers. That's what's being auctioned off here. And there are basically three kinds of products in that market which they are auctioning off for the next 3 years. So they start off with a very large price, and of course every provider who has signed up for this auction is willing to provide electricity for a very high price. But the amount of megawatt hours that we get is much more than what's needed. Consequently, not all of it is going to be utilized. So the next step that the auctioneer has to do is reduce that price. And this reduction is being done in steps until we get to the point where the prices are sufficiently reduced and they're exactly at the point where all the megawatt hours can be sold. Mm-hmm. So we keep decreasing it in every iteration. Now, one of the callers talked about the fact that the auction was held in secret. And actually, that's very good for the customers, because the less information we have, the less signaling that goes on. Consequently, seller A does not know what seller B knows, and seller B doesn't know what A knows. So we need those kind of rules. And the success of such an auction does depend on the rules which are in place. By doing this auction for about 5 days, they finally settled to a price of about somewhere in the $60 to $65 per megawatt hour for electricity for the next 3 years. So this is a price that the distribution companies have to buy, have to pay when they buy as electricity. Mm.
So it's as if they start out and they say, okay, so who'll sell me a megawatt hour for $100? And a number of companies will come along and say, sure, we'll sell it to you for $100. And then someone says, okay, who'll sell it to me for $90? And some of those original companies will drop out. They'll say no.
And they can't come back again.
Okay. So some of the remaining ones will say, okay, we'll do $90. Then they say, all right, who will sell it for $80? And some other companies will say, okay, I don't want to do that. A few will be left at $80. And they keep knocking it down until they get to the point where it says they can satisfy the demand for the power at the lowest price that the wholesalers are willing to sell it at, right?
That's a very good explanation.
All right. And theoretically, then, that should mean that you get to the point where it's for the company that's buying the power to then distribute to customers, it's down as low as it's going to go.
In this market.
Yes.
All right. Yes, correct.
So theoretically, then, that's a way of getting down to the end user, what we residential customers pay, getting it down as low as it can go.
Okay, so to put in perspective why we needed this auction, mm-hmm. We talked about the restructuring. We talked about the fact that some of these companies own generation. So in order to buy as electricity and have an arm's length deal, they opted for this auction. And in fact, the Illinois Commerce Commission restricted Commonwealth Edison from buying too much of their own nuclear generation. So they could only buy 35% of the output of the nuclear plants from its subsidiary, which owns the nuclear power plants.
And then they sell the rest to somebody else.
And then they sell the rest to somebody else who comes in and may participate in this auction.
So they still might end up selling it to themselves.
Absolutely.
That doesn't really make a whole lot of sense to me, but that's apparently the way that it works. How much, and now just as a final question, how much now power does the Illinois Commerce Commission have ultimately to determine what it is that we residential customers pay?
I think this is a $64,000 question. I'm always distressed to see that its power is being emasculated so strongly in terms of calls for a rate freeze. And we have to see what's going to happen politically before I can answer that question. Certainly, given that we had already an extension of the 1997 restructuring once when it was done in 2004 to lengthen this by 2 years, I think the Illinois Commerce Commission has limited power at this stage.
Yeah, I guess that's a good point to make because, in fact, the freeze was it was extended once, and originally, I guess, it was only supposed to be 8 years.
So, right.
Right. They added another.
Correct. By 2005, all of us had the choice of choosing our own provider. And, of course, nothing changed because there was nobody to choose from.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll have to continue to watch to see how this develops. For the moment, we want to say thanks to our guest, George Gross, professor of electrical and computer engineering, also has an appointment as professor in the Institute of Government and Public Affairs here at University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Thank you very much.
Thank you.